Can't live talking about books and stuff.
Jen, how are you doing? Just in case you didn't know, that is Jen Sukfong Lee. I'm Dina Delbukia. You know that. You've been listening since the beginning. You're a good podcast listener.
Hi, friends of the podcast. I'm good. I'm squeaky. How are you?
Dina. I feel like less squeaky. Do you need oil?
Yes.
When you were a kid, did you love The Wizard of Oz?
No, I hated it. The flying monkeys really freaked me out. They actually made me headachy and nauseous.
Scary.
Yeah, yeah.
They're super scary. Yeah. I was a big fan, but also they were upsetting. Mm-hmm. Also, now one of my favorite things to say when things are not going well is when the witch gets killed at the end and she's melting and she goes, "Oh, what a world, what a world." Like, it really is one of the best things.
Wait, you said that you were a fan.
I was a fan, but
you're not anymore.
No, I still am. But this is one of our guests today. Hi, Jake Byrne.
Hello, Cantlit.
Jake Byrne, super Cantlit fan.
Yep. Recently got a job where I have to input data all day and also can listen to podcasts. So I've listened to almost every episode of this in the last few weeks. So I'm probably going to make a bunch of weird jokes that nobody gets.
I love that. I hope that you do. That I like the inside. I won't say baseball because it's a terrible sport for garbage people.
I know this
about you. But like it's inside some other sport that isn't terrible. Like professional darts, maybe.
Ooh, darts. I love darts. Sorry, that's not.
Yeah, there's a stabby. That's a stabby thing that gets thrown. I'm into that.
I once played darts with a man to try and seduce him, and the next day, my arm hurt so much that I couldn't move it, because it turns out that if you're not good at playing darts, that's actually a really irritating motion.
Wait.
5 hours.
But he got carpal tunnel from trying to seduce somebody with darts.
With darts.
That's amazing. Did you write a poem about that?
I haven't yet.
You should.
Okay.
That's actually a good idea for a poem. Also, I feel like this is a good lesson to us. Even if you're doing something that doesn't seem strenuous, just stretch after. Like, just always stretch, like stretch out that muscle. So today we have a very exciting episode with many, many, many guests.
So many.
There's actually guests missing, which we will talk about. People that are involved, really involved in what we haven't told you yet, but it's going to be super exciting when we do. We have some of the team from Rahila's Ghost Press, as well as two of their poets who just published beautiful, beautiful chapbooks. And so, hi, everybody.
Hello.
So exciting. So exciting. So I'm going to go around the room and then you can all, I'll say your name and then you can like, maybe you could just say whatever comes into your head. Does that sound fine?
That sounds intimidating, but I'll give it a shot.
Okay, great. So first, directly across from me. So if you're unfamiliar with Daniel's apartment, it's just full of garbage. There's
so
chains on the walls. Yeah. It's really stressful. And no, it's beautiful.
I just killed a rat that was rustling around.
Yeah. And now we're roasting it over an open fire above my laptop where we record the podcast.
It's a little
chimichurri for it.
Yep. Oh, yeah. You're so good. You're so good. Right across from me. What is your title? Publisher?
Managing editor.
Managing editor. Curtis LeBlanc, managing editor. Hi, Curtis.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
That's good. I'm good, too.
You are good?
Okay, yeah, great. I'm doing really well.
All right. Well, we'll get into more detail soon. But you're a publisher. Or what is your
yes,
title?
Yes, I am publisher.
This lovely, intelligent person is Mallory Tater, publisher of the press.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, Mallory.
Hi.
I heard you had brunch.
We had brunch at Fable Diner, me and Jake.
Yeah.
And it was really cute, really good apple jam. I've never had apple jam.
Oh, apple jam. When I go for brunch there, I always get a milkshake.
Oh.
I just really like to eat ice cream at all hours of the day. Yeah, so that's a hot tip. They have really, really good milkshakes. moving along. An editor.
Yes, that's right.
Sean Robinson. Hi, Sean.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, real good. Did you have any brunch? You had a piece of a donut earlier.
I had a scone.
On you had a scone from here. Where?
From Bump and Grind.
Oh, Bump and Grind. Which is coffee shop. Cafe. Coffee shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Very cool. All right. Next up, we're going to just talk to you again.
Okay.
One of the poets published by Raheela's ghost, Jake Byrne. We already heard from him, and he told us an amazing story about his arm pain.
It sure was a good story.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I've shared that.
Everybody loved it. It's here forever. And don't forget, when I say I'm going to cut that out, 80% of the time I don't mean it.
Daniel can edit it out later.
Yeah.
Oh, I was warned about that.
Yeah. But if you tell me to cut something out, I really will. If I say it, it's like up in the air. Next to Jake, a former guest.
Friend of the podcast.
This is her fourth appearance on Can't Lit. How are you feeling about this fourth appearance at Del Barkley?
I feel fantastic. I'm happy to be here again.
I would have you on every episode, frankly. Jen?
Yeah. Yes. Always.
Yeah.
It's really great. And you are also an editor.
Yes, that is correct.
You edited Jake's book.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're going to go real deep on that soon. And our final guest today, Megan Jones.
Hi.
Oh, but you professionally go by Megan Fenya Jones.
Yeah, my friend told me to do that.
I like it. I think it's great.
Cool. Great.
And Megan is also a poet whose chapbook just came out with the press. So her chapbook is called Normal Women. Jake's chapbook is called The Tide. We have some people from the team missing. Does anyone besides me want to talk about that? Mallory, you can tell us who's missing. Your beautiful team.
Selena Bowen edited Benny Zhao's book, Bad Egg, and they are unable to be here today, which is too bad because I really wanted to talk to them about...
We can talk about them.
Well, yeah, now we can just talk about them. And also on the team is Shazia Hafiz Ramji, and she was unable to be here today, and Dominique Bernier-Cormier, who left us and moved to Toronto. But...
Jeez.
He's still part of the press, and he will be working with us remotely from Toronto.
That's cool. I mean, sure.
Like, I'm sad about it, but he's turning a new leaf in Toronto, which I hear is a good place.
Is it?
I don't know.
Should I make a shout out? I love Toronto. Some of our best friends of the podcast are in Toronto.
Yeah, talk about your best friends of the podcast.
Who are my best friends of the podcast who live in Toronto? Paul and Bianca.
Yeah, they're the best.
Yeah, we love them.
They are the best.
Mm-hmm. Jake is launching his book in Toronto. What day is that?
December 2nd, which is next Saturday at Knife Fork Book.
Is December 2nd next Saturday?
Yep. Sure is.
Jeez.
Oh, this is just something I want people to know. If you think this is topical and some really important shit has gone down, we're not on top of it because we're recording this in November, and it's probably not going to go out until January. I mean, it might go out in December. It's hard to say. So if you're like, why didn't those assholes talk about important cultural or political or whatever event? That's why.
We didn't know.
Behind the times.
We have no idea.
We just didn't know.
We are behind the times.
Literally.
Literally behind the times. So how's... Jen, do you want to give us a quick what's happening before we go deep?
Okay. What's happening?
Nothing's happening to me. I'm still having to leave my apartment that I don't want to do. Vancouver is a beautiful, wonderful place that I love because many people live here that I love, and it is my life and my community is here and everything is important to me, but the city wants me to die a painful death, so it's forcing me to move and I don't care for it. But that's all I want to say about that.
Okay.
Great. Jen, what's happening?
You can sleep in my house.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, you know, I have a fireplace. You don't need blankets.
I bet Oscar would let me hang out with him.
Oh, yeah, my kid. He'd be into that. He'd be into that. Every time... Actually, I talked about Dina yesterday, and he just yelled at me, too many snacks.
I love snacks.
What's happening? Okay, well, I'm going to make it about me. Let's make it about me. The Conjoined was just nominated for the International Dublin Literary Award, formerly known as the Impact Dublin, which is great. If I win, I get to wear a ball gown and go to Dublin.
So fancy.
And because it's a very rich prize, I'm going to bring you all with me.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Yeah, because I'll need people to hold up my skirt while I pee. Yeah, you'll do it, right? Yes. It's cool. I promise you I'm not a messy peer. It's going to be fine. But I'll be very drunk and It's gonna be fine. And the other thing, which I love about it, is because like this prize thing, like I get nominated for things sometimes. I never win a thing. This is my thing. I'm like the Susan Lucci of Camlet. But
you have a long way to go before the Susan
Lucci. Yeah, it's true. But the really amazing thing is that like my face showed up in one of my ex's timelines on Twitter because of this prize thing. And it was like not a tweet that I'd sent out. It was like the media, which is funny, but it was my face. And then he screen capped it and sent it to me. And he wrote in all caps, "I cannot escape you." And I'm like, yeah, you can't. You suck. And I don't think he listens to this. No, I say this every podcast. Like, I don't know which ex is Jen talking about. We don't know. So that's what's happening with me. You know, what's happening?
What is happening?
What's happening with you guys? What's up?
Yeah, what's happening?
You know what? I love 11 a.m. I feel like it's when I'm at my best.
Yeah.
I'm so active right now. By 4 p.m. I'll be like, I'm so tired.
You're like a cat.
Yeah. Yeah, I like bolt away at 6 a.m. I'm like, hey everybody, what's up? And I'm like, where's my food?
Can't I drink water out of the tub faucet?
Yeah,
cats do.
Cats will drink. They'll drink water out of anything. Yeah. Who wants to go first? Who wants to talk about something that's happening before we get deep into the question times? Nobody. Everyone's like, well, I don't want to talk about stuff. Jake,
I'll say what's happening. What's happening is that I am here in Vancouver, and it's been really fun, a really fun visit. It's only my second time here, and I'm getting on a plane in like 12 hours to go back to Montreal where I live and work, and then I have to go back to work. That's what's happening for me, and also I lost my first major contest last night, which is exciting.
Aww.
It was an honor to be longlisted.
Yeah.
You were in a really great group of people.
It was a very good group of people.
Really good group of people, and friend of the podcast, former guest. You say it. You can say it.
Which one?
Say friend of the podcast, former guest.
Friend of the podcast, former guest. Mm-hmm. Warner.
Sherita Warner, yeah, was the winner of the Morton Prize from the Puritan. And friend of the podcast, non-guest. Keep going.
I just met this person. Yeah. I'm not really 100.
Ellie Sawatsky. Yeah. Was the, came in second. So
yes,
real big West Coast connections to this lovely prize from our, I don't know if they're friends of the podcast. The Puritan.
We love it when friends of the podcast win things.
We love it.
Friends of the podcast.
We do love it. This is why we are somewhat sad. Well, we're mostly sad that friend of the podcast, Eden Robinson, did not win the Giller Prize.
About that. Why did that happen?
I don't know. Did you have
I didn't know anything about the other shortlisted books.
Yeah.
So maybe they were all worthy. But I did really like Eden Robinson's book.
It was amazing. Eden forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other shortlisted books, I'm sure that I can't even remember what the other ones are now because I was pulling for Eden so hard. I didn't even look at the other shortlisted books. But, like, I'm sure, you know, all these books are great. Not the issue. It's just that we only like it when friends of the podcast win things.
I will say there were some highlights from the broadcast, including Rachel Cusk wearing a crop top to the Gillers. Very important for the fashion moment.
Watershed moment. And
I know. Also, Rachel Cusk, literature. I love Rachel Cusk's books. Both her most recent books are phenomenal. Big fan, huge fan.
Can I say something about Rachel Cusk?
Yeah.
Yesterday, I mean, not yesterday, literally months ago. I was hanging out with an ex-boyfriend, and he told me that he loves Rachel Cusk. And he is like an athlete and never really was into reading. And now he loves Rachel Cusk.
That's awesome. You did it to him. It was you.
You made him better. You made him better.
You're an influencer.
Yeah.
He made me very sporty.
Is that good? Is that a good thing? Yeah. Okay. Okay, cool. As long as you're okay with that.
I'm fine with
that. And please keep talking.
Yeah.
I think I saw Jake at the gym yesterday.
What?
Was he throwing darts?
Were you at the gym yesterday?
This is Megan's what's happening, just right there.
I was at the gym yesterday.
I think that I saw you. I know that I saw you.
What?
But I felt really embarrassed, so I didn't say hi.
Oh, I don't think I saw you.
I think I saw you with two of those round things with handles. Yeah.
All right. I guess there's only one gym in Vancouver.
And you look very strong.
I felt very strong. I'd eaten noodles and had a Coca-Cola right before I worked out. So I was, my body was coursing with energy.
But when, I don't know if you guys go to the gym ever.
No.
No. Okay. But when I go to the gym and I see someone I know, I pretend I don't know them because no one wants to talk to someone they know at the gym when they're sweating. I don't think.
I'm glad that you didn't say hello.
Yeah, I thought you would appreciate it. So I just wanted to bring it up now so you could thank me.
Blushing, no, which you can't see on listening to the podcast.
Yeah. That's my what's happening.
That was just stellar what's happening.
That was so good.
Who?
Curtis.
Curtis.
Yeah, Curtis.
What's happening with me?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm trying to sell a novel right now.
Oh.
And it's a slog. I keep getting these really, really nice rejections. People seem to be really liking it, except for it sounds like it's too Canadian.
Wait, is this your first novel?
Yeah, it's my first novel.
How many rejections now?
What, from publishers?
Yeah.
Just two. It's that's early in the process.
No, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's actually been encouraging, but
yep.
Because both of those were like nice, but too Canadian. Who would have thought that would be a problem?
What's too Canadian? You have like a lockbox of secrets under the deck and people are sitting in their Muskoka chairs thinking about that really hard.
Yeah, it takes place on like a campground in Banff. No, it's about, it's about hockey or like competitive youth hockey in Saskatchewan.
What's too Canadian about that?
I thought that was...
I cannot believe nobody wants that.
I feel like Wendell Clark would be super into that.
But that's not what it's... That's not... I mean, that's sort of the context, but that's not what it's about.
No, of course it's not what it's about. It's not too Canadian.
It's a beautiful book.
Dude, that's just what people say.
Does anyone want to buy it out there? Hit me up.
Well, you could send it to me.
Industry.
Okay. No, send it to you.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, Buck Rider Books.
Buck Rider Books. I like. We'll read it.
Oh yeah,
I'll read it. Send it to me.
Oh, okay. We'll second win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Send it to me. Send it to me directly.
Okay.
Good networking, Curtis.
All right. I'm glad that I said that.
I'm gonna give you, make sure you have Jen's email if you don't already. You should from before.
Okay.
Industry movers and shakers, pay attention. Oh, I just want one more Giller interjection. Fashion wise, I just want to say that also Michelle Winters was wearing a velvet jumpsuit. So I just feel like people
really stepped up this year.
Yeah, people really upped the game. And Mary Walsh, who was the host, had like a really amazing hairdo that was an up. Yeah. And like sparkly beautifulness. And she's not 20 years old. She was just like, I'm going to wear a short sparkly dress and be cool and funny. Those are my hot takes on the Giller.
Did you see the footage of Eden Robinson, though, doing like a 360 on the red carpet?
With her button blanket cape?
Yeah, with her cape. Mm-hmm. She did this 360 and she just kept laughing the entire time. And I'm like, yeah, Naomi Watts could learn a few things from Eden Robinson.
Yeah, definitely. 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 I mean, I'm sure. Yeah. There's a lot of people that could learn a lot from Eden.
Basically everybody.
Just like, yeah, most people. Okay, Mallory, what's happening?
I actually, writing aside, it's our engage-iversary next week. We've been getting engaged for a year, which I was just thinking about yesterday.
Yay.
So that's cool.
Yay.
Woo. Yeah, I don't, we'll just go eat some spaghetti or something.
Yeah, I think we're going to go to Nick's Spaghetti House, right? That's the plan.
Is that place good?
It's hilarious. I don't know if it's good.
Is there like a ring? You have a ring.
We both have rings.
Can you do something with the ring at the spaghetti house? Like have a long noodle and you guys are one at each end and the rings are in the middle and you eat toward the rings? Why am I so invested in this?
I'm going to hide them and they're delicious. They have this like salad that's just like tomatoes and onions in like a really nice vinaigrette. And I'm just going to hide them in there.
Wearing them.
Why I feel we like to do that? One of you can do that.
We're going to take them off.
But I really want someone to put one into a meatball, just like shove it in. And then it's like all soft early and weird, and then it comes out and it's covered in just like ground meats.
I mean, yeah, that's what I was thinking would happen. Great. So,
yeah. I mean, that does sound really romantic and cool.
We like Knicks because it was really fun to people watch last year. We went just for fun because I used to go there as a kid with my family. And it's like so old school spaghetti house, like family run, red checker tablecloths.
Yeah, that's the best.
Yeah. Butter packets.
Oh, yay. Butter
packets. Yeah. Mm.
That's classy.
It felt very classy.
It's classy, and you can put them in your purse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not saying I do that.
Actually, one time when I went to the old spaghetti factory with my parents, I put the rest of our bread in my purse and I ate it for breakfast.
That really good sourdough,
yeah,
right?
Really
you don't want to waste that shit. They're just going to throw it away. Put it in your goddamn purse.
I did.
Right. My mom would love you.
I just want to do a poll. Did anyone used to eat creamers at the diner? I just want to say there is a show of yes. Three hands, four hands.
How
yeah.
You
would just drink it. You would drink it, not eat it. Yeah.
And you chase it with a maple syrup.
Okay. I'm glad that other people did this thing that I felt like people were like, why are you doing that? But my parents were cool with it. They were like, whatever, she's into it. But we're not going to stifle her creamer fixation. Cremo brand creamer.
We used to put a packet of sugar into it. And then shake that up and then drink it.
Sean, that's the best.
That's really terrible and no one
Did
should do that.
Pour some sugar
on
you?
Yeah!
Like, that was bad and our parents shouldn't have let us do that.
Nope, that's totally fine and I'm glad that your parents did let you do that. They sound really fun and normal. Are they fun and normal?
They're not fun.
But they're normal.
They sound a little fun.
That does sound a little fun.
Is that Sean's what's happening? What's happening?
They didn't care what we were doing, that's all. We ran wild, literally. Like we were like playing on beaver dams and chasing deer around.
Yeah!
Sean had the most Canadian upbringing out of anyone.
Yes, possibly that's probably true. Yeah, like I did like go on my father's trap line when I was a child on a snowmobile.
That
like,
sounds lovely.
Yeah, but I don't write about any of that because I'm resentful of Canadian cliches.
Is that what's happening? Your resentment for Canadian cliches?
Yeah, Margaret Atwood ruined everything for me. And I can't do it.
I think most of us feel that way.
You know, I'm still angry at surfacing like 40 years later.
Yeah, surfacing. What's up with that?
Surfacing.
What was up with that?
Surfacing
what's
is...
What's happening with surfacing?
I have issues with surfacing because like I came to... Okay, this is stupid. I came to Margaret Atwood from Lady Oracle, which is about like... you know, spiritualism and like tapping into like your psychic energy, even though you know it's stupid or you think it's stupid, because of course Margaret probably thinks it's stupid. And then I read, people are like, you need to read Surfacing because it's better than Lady Oracle. And I read Surfacing and I'm like, I don't get it. Am I stupid? Was I stupid?
No.
No.
I mean, I didn't read it.
I mean, I read it.
I had to read it in school.
Yeah, I did too.
I had to read it in school?
Yeah.
Did you hate it?
I don't think I understood it, but I was like literally 18 and super dumb.
I loved Surfacing when I read it because I was 15 and pretentious and I knew I wanted to be a writer. And I was at summer school and I did a presentation on Surfacing.
On Surfacing? What did you say about it?
I have no idea because I was 15 in summer school. And I wasn't paying that much attention. I was only taking it because I dropped out of English class to take musical theater.
Oh my God, you're my new hero.
Wait, what was one of your productions in musical theater?
Well, it was actually just a class.
Oh.
So I didn't pursue musical theater. I was in a musical theater class, and I was Kinnicky in Grease, even though I'm a tenor.
What? That's so cool.
Sort of.
Amazing.
My entire family came because they're very supportive. And they were mortified because I had to spend an entire scene making out with the person who played Rizzo. And
it was probably also gay.
I don't know. Haven't followed up with them, but we'll see. So I feel like that ties into the chapbook because my family is also going to be super mortified when they read that. And that's what I'm feeling.
Oh, so they haven't had a look at that yet.
I mean, no one has. It's
been so
released.
Fresh. So fresh.
This is a good question. How do you guys feel about family, loved ones reading? The holidays are coming up, potentially awkward. Let's hear about this.
Oh my God, I have so much to say.
Well, I was going to say Megan had a lot of extended family at the launch.
Yeah, that's true.
I was so happy that they came. Like, it was really, really nice.
They bought so many of your books. Yeah. It was so sweet.
And it was really funny because, oh, Adele, we need to know what's happening. Can we just segue into Adele, what's happening?
We can segue to Adele and then we'll jump back.
Because we need to know.
What's happening with me? Just a lot of teaching in my life. I've been teaching comp at UBC. I've been teaching poetry workshops on the weekend when I'm not teaching, and the weekdays. So yeah, that's how I spend my days. And I'm looking forward to a diversity in publishing event that's happening in February that Hannah McGregor is organizing.
Talk about that more.
Yeah, so it just got funding and it's going to be a slew of panels. It's in February, I think like around the 8th or 9th. And yeah, I'm going to be on a panel about intergenerational mentorship. And yeah,
awesome.
really rad people like Aaron Wunker is going to be there. Ashley from Metatron is flying in. Jordan Abel is going to be there. It's going to be a day
friend of
the podcast, former guest. So yeah, I think it's going to be a really exciting and productive day of just like getting together and just like hashing shit out about the publishing industry. So yeah, I thought it was really interesting that I was invited to do the mentorship panel because I do feel like I'm at this like weird point in my life where I'm like pivoting, into this role where I'm like teaching and mentoring people. So I have, you know, I'm doing that work and now I need to go like think about that work in depth. Yeah, so that's what's up.
Cool.
I also just want to shout out to Hannah McGregor's recent podcast, Secret Feminist Agenda, which is so great. And there was a bonus episode that appeared in my podcast feed, automatically downloaded. And it was a really great episode where it was in an academic environment that had been recorded and she was talking about just a lot of, I don't know, like really smart things. I'm not an academic. Don't let anyone ever try and tell you that I am because I'm definitely not. Did you listen to this?
No. Talk about academics.
Okay. But yeah, it was about open source and just the way things are disseminated. And she talked extensively about podcasts and about her other podcast, I'm sure that's how you say it, which please, like that. Anyway, Hannah McGregor's great, and I'm really glad you're doing that. Okay, please talk about academics if you want to, but Adele.
Oh, I just want to shout out to, how brilliant and generous Hannah is.
She's great.
Yeah, no.
Can we call her a friend of the podcast?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, she's also a podcaster, right? So I think there's some sort of,
Rival of the podcast.
I think, on, the family tree of, the genealogy of, Canadian podcasts, you guys are probably, cousins or something.
Yeah.
But, no, there's just something, what she's doing is actually, incredibly radical, and it's so hard to do in that realm to, public academic thought that doesn't actually feel like academic thought, that's actually just, very curious.
Well, she's pushing
the boundaries, and the success of Which Please was people want to talk about Harry Potter in playful and curious and smart ways that aren't in a classroom. And she made that so open and accessible, her and Marcel. And then, so I'm just she's so smart, but and having been on that podcast, she's just such a generous interlocutor. Mm. You feel like she's a friend, but she's also she's smarter than you, but she doesn't make you feel it.
She's definitely smarter than me. Yeah. I was just going to say quickly, is that I assigned one of Dina's short stories to my students at the Writer's Studio, and they all wrote these little essays, and I sent bits of them to Dina, and they were so great, right? They were so great. Shout out to my students who loved your story. And
I have feelings about it.
It was really lovely.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, I sent them to her last night. I was drinking, I opened the good wine for myself. I don't know why I saved the good wine for other people.
It.
Yeah, anyway, so I opened the good wine for myself, and then I was marking essays with the good wine, and I just kept sending Dina all these little essays, and it was good.
It was good.
Megan, tell us about your family buying your book and how awkward you feel about them possibly reading it. Which mic do you want? Oh. You have choices.
I don't really feel awkward about them reading it. I feel like they've all experienced similar, not hopefully, because some of the experience aren't ideal, but they've probably all experienced similar things. So maybe it's fine. Yeah. I did feel a little nervous about reading in front of them all, but most of them couldn't hear it because they were in the back, very back. And I don't know if they could actually really hear it. So that was sort of like a blessing.
I really like that at the launch you chose to read one of the more graphic poems.
And my when I read the graphic poem, my mom literally was right in front of the stage. I don't know if you saw that. And there was a spotlight right on her face. and she was smiling so much and having such a... It made me feel really good that she was just right there. And I felt like I was just reading to my mom. I wanted to hold her hand. And it didn't feel bad at all. It felt fine.
That is so sweet. I really loved that moment when you read that poem too. Like everyone was just, I don't know, was like the air was different in the room when you were reading that. And it's a short poem and it was just, yeah.
Yeah.
There's period blood in a bun, and it's really important that people know.
I've been walking around with that line in my head for my entire life.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's really just it's a wonderful poem.
How do you feel, Jake?
Yeah.
So my family are like universally extremely supportive, which is amazing. And I'm super lucky. But they want me to have, I think they're also supportive that I think I actually have to have a launch in my hometown just for them. Because my hometown is Peterborough, Ontario. It's a garbage place, but I love my family. So I have to go back there sometimes. And my family's really big because we're Irish. So it's really great. But when I was writing this poem, I was just like, oh, whatever. Like, I knew that I would feel anxious about people reading it, but I knew it in an intellectual way and I had no idea how it would actually feel. And now I'm freaking out a little and I didn't expect to. So I guess first publication jitters, but
we can just destroy all the copies.
Well, that would be, I'd really appreciate that. Thank you. It was good while it lasted.
Can I tell you what I say to people about this? Because this happens, people ask me about this all the time. Because like my first novel was really about my family. Mm-hmm. And I say that the people who love you are really proud that you've written this book because they know you care about it.
Yes.
And the people who love you will continue to love you and will continue to support you through that. The people you don't like, it doesn't matter anyway.
Yes.
That's so true.
I also can take faith in that every single time my family has come to one of my readings, which they do quite frequently because they're all lovely, they've all said, you were really good. I had no idea what you were talking about. So I'm hoping that holds true for this one too.
You know what? My mother doesn't read English. It's a fucking blessing.
So your mom doesn't read English, but how do you like tell her about your book or like, how does that work?
You know, she sees my book at Costco sometimes, which is cool. And she's there getting her free samples and she'll see my books. She doesn't really care. Like for a long time, my mom, okay, the thing about my mom is that her dream for me and I have four older sisters. The dream for me and my sisters was that we would become beauty pageant queens. That was her goal for us, except we were all very dorky and unattractive till we were about 30. So that didn't happen. And so the book thing is really not on her radar. So she doesn't, so for a while she asked me, do you make the books in your house? And I'm like, no, I actually don't. Gosh. Yeah. So that's and she comes to stuff sometimes, not always. And I think she's proud, but I also think she doesn't understand what I do. So it's a totally different thing anyway.
But doesn't she count the number of copies at Costco?
You've obviously listened to the podcast.
I have listened to pretty much every episode of this podcast.
She does. She sees them, she'll count. If she sees them and she knows that they're there, she'll count them and then she'll go back 2 days later and recount.
She has a tally.
And then she'll go back 2 days later and recount.
That's definitely pride. There's pride
there's
for sure.
There's pride. And then she leaves the books on her coffee table.
Oh,
that's really a lot of pride, I think.
Okay, so we've been talking to Jake and Megan a lot. They've been talking a lot, which we love. Mm-hmm. But I want to know Raheela's ghost's origin story. I feel like our friends of the podcast need to hear that.
Yeah. friends with the podcast need to know.
Well, so Raheel is the name of my great-great-grandmother, and we were on a, Curtis and I were on a road trip to Saskatchewan, March 2016, because he was researching his novel, and I was researching my genealogy, because I had relatives from Romania come over in the late 1800s to that area. So we were in Dysart, Saskatchewan, and we couldn't find her body, and in the parish registry, it said that her death was extraordinary. And I know for a fact she loved to, it's very bizarre.
It actually said that, extraordinary.
Yeah, and okay. I still, been, I talked to Leah Horlick, like we were trying to figure out what that could translate to from Romanian. Like, anyways, so still investigating what that could have, why that would have been written. She was around my age, which is super dark. But anyway, she loved to read and journal. And so I kind of, I just got obsessed with the idea that we could be like, we're like somehow, we just feel, I just feel very close to her. Which is crazy because she's like my great, great grandma. Anyway, on that trip, Curtis and I were talking about how much we love chapbooks and how we were just enjoying settling into this community so much and how we'd love to someday do that as a goal. So it just happened at the same time. Like we were pretty much in Dysart when we were talking about in the car. So then we graduated our MFAs at UBC and then we put this together around May and everyone on our ed board was like super stoked to come aboard and like edit and brainstorm and like help us create. And it was just really great. So that's the origin story.
And so you had the idea and then what were the next steps? So just kind of thinking about if people are listening and they're curious about how you went about it or how they could potentially like try and make this happen for themselves. I know you had a very successful Indiegogo campaign. So yeah, how did things proceed from that moment?
I'll pass that to you because you started with like the website and doing all of that sort of stuff. But also, can you tell them about your original logo?
Do you remember the original logo?
I repressed that. Adele's like, no, never again.
I'm okay. I'm
for
not
the archives.
I'm not a designer. So let's just I'm not a designer, I'm not an illustrator.
Curtis, that's okay.
But so it was while I was finishing up at Prism as the promotional editor there, or editor of promotions. I don't know what my title was. And then so I was finishing up there and they had InDesign on the computer, so I was like, well, Mallory and I are thinking about doing this. I have InDesign on this computer. I gotta do this now before this job is done. And so I was like, well, I guess we're going to need a logo. So I started designing. Well, my original idea was to have like a little Pac-Man ghost inside the R. And it just it looked
this
really
bad.
This
sounds actually kind of delightful. And can you make that into a sock for me?
Yeah, well.
Okay, so he sends it to me. And I'm like, oh, that was not what I had in my head. Like I was thinking like soft and vintage and like kind of eerie and like intriguing. And it was just like this like dorky little ghost. And it was just like, and it wasn't even, yeah. And it was, I think it was even sans serif too. Like it just didn't kind of go for like what I wanted.
Honestly, when you were talking about this, I was the whole time while you were talking was picturing the ghost emoji where it's like the ghost with its tongue out and like one eye.
It was really similar to that. I mean, less detailed. But anyway, so I said, Curtis, I really don't like it. And he was like, really? I worked really hard on it. And I was like, yeah.
Did you guys almost break up over this?
No. I was like, okay. And then I said, okay, I knew in my heart, I was like, let's pitch it to the group because we already had our group. Awkward silence ensued over the internet for a couple of days. And then finally Adele diplomatically was like, I really like it, but I think that that's not the direction that we should go in. Maybe something a little more stark.
Adele, could you please comment on your diplomatic hot take?
Forever the diplomat. What was it you said earlier? I like Adele.
This is why we have Adele on the podcast all the time is because she says really mean things in a really sweet voice.
Preparing myself.
Then you made such a gorgeous logo like that, you know, that was just the first run. And then we settled on this like beautiful one that, you know, I look forward to getting tattooed on my body in like 2 years time.
The second one was a lot nicer. Yeah. So, yeah, but we didn't put it on. I think we only showed Adele. It didn't even leave the bar. It never even made it on the internet.
Oh, right. Maybe that was it. Yeah. It was. Yeah. Did you see it, Sean?
I think I saw it. Because I was also working at Prism when Curtis was there. Curtis did a lot of Raheela's ghosts work while he was working at Prism.
Yeah, it all happened at Prism.
We don't work there anymore, so we can tell the truth.
You can talk about, I guess, like the website process for you, because you did a really beautiful job with the website.
Yeah, so then after, I guess, put together the website, put together the social media accounts. And then we're like, okay, now we like have a presence. Now we got to find some books, talk to our like amazing editorial board. And everyone had all these great suggestions of people they'd like to talk to. Writers put their trust in us, which was super nice. Megan, Benny, Jake. And then from there, we set a really ambitious deadline to get the books out in September. And just a crazy ambitious deadline. Didn't happen. And then what? We had an Indiegogo as well. Where we just, you know, it's just a pre-sale. When did that start? Oh, that's a good question. I think, when did that start? Was it July?
Jake remembers. Okay, yeah, July. So, let's look at this. So, you, 2016,
yeah.
Spring 2016, you're like, we're on a road trip, we have this idea. Mm-hmm. Then, when was the next phase of actual action?
A year.
So, the next year.
Yeah.
And then, at that point, you talked to the editors.
Yes.
And did everyone immediately have someone in mind?
Oh, for this, actually, yes, for this time. We're open for submissions now, but we thought for the first round, because we're new and we really wanted to feel very confident and kind of get rid of the submission process and just move a little quicker. So we solicited for this round. And Adele had just gone to Banff with Jake.
Yeah, and I think, we were in Banff and our friendship...
Sure were.
Yeah.
our friendship was blossoming. I'd actually read a version of The Tide for the Bronwyn Wallace Award. And then after the fact, I realized that was you. And so I had this hot tip on this fantastic, devastating poem by my new friend. And I put Jake forward and everyone seemed to be into it.
That's great. And so you were at Banff in May also. So like everything is happening in May. Mm-hmm. And when did the Indiegogo start? In July? So everything happened very quickly
for
you guys.
We also had a party.
That was in August, right?
Yeah, that was in August.
So like the actual timeline is Mallory and I went in March of 2016 and sort of came up with the idea. And in April, like pretty much April 2017, we're like, I was finishing up my MFA and Mallory had just finished and we're like, okay, we can do this now. And we just did everything in the summer. So like, within the last 8 months.
Yeah. I just felt really fast to me and I was so impressed with how organized you were. And I also really like that you decided to have, it's a great team. The people that you're working with are amazing. Not just the poets, but everyone that's working for the press. So you decided to also kind of have a larger team than a lot of people would, but I think it works for you.
It does work for us. I think what's really cool is that we're going to publish 3 writers at a time, like as we just did. But we have more than enough editors for that number. But what's nice is that way we can pick editors that really speak to a writer's work. It's not going to be like a forced relationship because we have editors to choose from and, based on people's schedules and capacity. So I think it's like worked out really well. It's a little like, it's stress reducing for the editors.
Yeah. I think that's
in that way,
really,
cause they don't
really
have
smart.
To work every single round. They can contribute in other ways. And Shazia did a beautiful job on the design. She's really, really, really good at doing that. It was amazing.
She's amazing in many, many respects. But these books are beautiful.
Yeah. So Dom didn't edit this round, so I imagine like he'll probably want to in the spring. So it's just kind of nice. And then I think I like the sense of community from it. I think it's fun. So I wanted more people on board. I'm not that much of a control freak, so I like getting people's like opinions on things.
Yeah, well, and we've talked about this in other contexts, but I feel the same way. I feel like when you're a more extroverted person in the literary community, you kind of are drawn to projects that involve more people as opposed to you constantly doing things on your own. And I know we've talked about this and you identify with that.
Yes.
As just like a way of operating. So yeah, I for sure get that. And I love it. Like there's so many things. I couldn't do this podcast without other people. Like there's tons of things that, are just untouchable unless you have people to support you that you're working with.
Well, and like writing itself is such a solitary act and like that's what we all do. So
sucks.
It's really nice to honestly, like I have never, I know you've written collaboratively, but I never have done that. And
you guys, you should do it. But also if you want hot tips, I'm thinking about maybe like doing a workshop about collaboration. So if you think that's a good idea, just tweet at me.
Ooh. That's a really good idea. I will tweet at you. But yeah, so I feel like going on to the publishing side of things and still being like involved in the community, but in a different like facet, may as well get more people on board and like be less lonely in some ways too. Like part of it's an excuse for me to like socialize and like have a think tank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're a think tank. We're doing it.
What's your like mandate? I know that's a terrible word. What do you want for this Realist Ghost moving forward, like with these three books and then going forward, like what are you seeing as your editorial vision, if you want to put it that way?
I think we really want to support like emerging poets, and I think that's really important. Not that we are not considering people that are established or have another book before, but I think it's really important to like hear from new people who are trying to navigate how to get their work out and are just like developing, might not even have a full length manuscript yet because chapbooks are a lot shorter. And we want to prioritize LGBTQ folks and Indigenous writers, people of color, women writers. So I think that that's kind of what we're looking for. Mind you, we're not excluding anybody. We're just going to read. We're definitely taking some missions this round. And though we have a few voices in mind that we'd kind of like to hear from if they have anything. But we are like, yeah.
We have crushes.
We have crushes, yes.
Yes.
Yes, we have community or literary crushes that we might. Like, I had a crush on Megan's work, so I sought out Megan first. So we might still keep doing that.
I think crushes are the way to go. Yeah, I think that should be Canlet's like mandate.
But we have quite a nice amount of submissions so far, and there's some really good work. I'm really excited. Like our inbox is pouring in with like beautiful manuscripts.
Can I get real crass and ask about cash money? And how we do need to know about it, you know, transparency. And you're a new press, and I feel like, you know, even with all sorts of endeavors that I have been involved with, it's taken us time to be able to pay people a certain amount or whatever it is that we do. And you just started the Indiegogo, you know, first round to get things up and running. So what's kind of your plan for that part of it in terms of, I guess, both the writers and then the editors and that kind of thing, like how you want to navigate? You don't have to talk about specific numbers, but I'm happy to just hear about like how that's going to work.
I don't know if it is going to work.
Right.
The money really stresses me out.
It's really hard.
We've gotten so much support through the pre-sales. Was really smart for us. It was a smart move. It enabled us to, feel support, in like multiple ways. So that was the right move for us. I feel like because it was our first Indiegogo, it will probably, if we had another one, we'd probably make less than we did. But we smashed through our goal by like 200% or something crazy. And the fundraiser was also super fun in that way. But yeah, I hate talking about money, so.
It's gross.
Yeah, money is the worst. I don't want anything to do with it. But unfortunately, yeah, so the Indiegogo was great. People were so supportive. And it really set us up for maybe like, you know, a few years in terms of putting out print runs, which is really nice. And then authors gave the option of paying in books or like a sort of equivalent amount of money in terms of like unit cost or whatever.
Right,
and then,
right.
Yeah. And everyone's taking the books. And so we gave them 25% of the first print run. So 25 books, and then we'll spot them some every time we do some more prints. And editors, we still haven't figured it out. We tried, we've tried to give them, talk to them about getting money, and they don't want it. So, but you know, we'll figure it all out. Yeah.
Yeah, Sean, give us.
We did end up. I think we paid our illustrator a little more than we had planned to, just because our fundraising was so successful. So that we're already getting her at like a huge discount from her normal rates. So it was nice to like give a little bit more of a somewhat symbolic amount.
Oh yeah, can we shout out Amy Frew, who did the covers?
Oh, they're beautiful.
They're so beautiful.
They're
so
stunning. Beautiful. She's so talented. Yeah, I'm glad that worked out.
I feel like I'll never have a better cover. Like I'm starting at a really, really good place.
Yeah, you're starting at a high level.
Yeah,
it's really good. I think it's great to. I had no expectation for what you guys were going to say on that front. And I think it's really nice that any independent press usually offers some free copies, but sometimes that is all you get. Like there's much, much bigger presses that don't give people an advance for a poetry book at all. So I think what you're doing is really, really great. And I like where you're sitting. Yeah.
It's in this good. Moment at the launch where I turned to everyone, I was like, wouldn't this be amazing if this was actually our job instead of the five other jobs we have?
I know. That's what I say every time I record this podcast where I'm like, why can't I be the Canlit Marc Maron? This is bullshit. But instead of a garage, I come to Daniel's apartment and he's not here.
Megan has a poem about that in her book. It's called Canlit.
Yeah, I thought you meant a poem about Daniel's apartment.
No. It's about
Have a poem about Daniel's apartment.
We all have poems about Daniel's
this
apartment.
This is a new chapbook that we're making right now, Daniel's apartment.
That's collaborative writing.
Yes.
Collaborative writing.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sean, what were you saying?
Oh, it's just a poem about how in America there are gymnasiums full of writers making money.
I'm also, is that even true? I would love to hear
that poem comes directly from a conversation I had with someone at a terrible party.
Oh my God.
Where they.
Gymnasiums.
I won't name the name. The gymnasiums was my addition.
No, I love it.
But I felt like a lot of conversations I was having with this person about Canadian literature were actually all about American literature. Like how much better it is and how much more money and opportunities there are in the States. And this is interesting because Curtis has been having a hard time selling his book, which is an amazing book, because I think publishers want potential to sell books in the U.S.
Of course.
Which is like, so it kind of, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this, but it's fresh. It's frustrating, though, for sure.
One thing I found out through this experience, which I love, is that in Canada, ISBN codes are free. In America, they're like $150 to $200 each. Because I had budgeted that out, and I had my credit card. I was just sitting there with the RG credit card ready to, like, you know, spend up to $600 on ISBNs. And then I was on the Canadian site, and it was like, welcome, please. And it was like, and it was like, here are your codes. And I was like, whoa, are you, like, that's amazing. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and that's, again, something I think a lot of people don't know if they're out there and they want to self-produce a chapbook or do whatever it is that they want to do publishing wise, to know that, yeah, here you can just get one.
Yeah. It takes up to 10 business days and you get as many, I think you can get up to like 6 codes per year.
No, you can get way more.
You can? Okay. Yeah.
You can get way more, says Megan.
How many do you have?
I have a million ISBNs.
You're just hoarding ISBNs.
Anyone need an ISBN? No, I'm pretty sure that...
Oh my God, I love the dirty backdoor.
I'm pretty sure that ISBN Canada is run by two really nice women in like Montreal or something. And they just like give out all the ISBNs. Aww. And their phone lines are open for like 2 hours every day. But otherwise they're just like... giving people ISBNs.
You should find them and get them on the show.
Yeah, they should do a chatbook. Talk to the ISBN ladies.
Yeah. It's been my idea to have all my ISBNs tattooed on my ass.
Right?
That's so good.
Because like Angelina Jolie has like the coordinates of her children's births, and I'm like, fuck that shit. I'm gonna have like ISBNs tattooed on my ass.
I love it.
Right.
I love it.
Because now we're at like 6 or something. I could potentially go really big with this.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like a tattoo artist needs to hit me up. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the books for a little bit.
Let's do this.
I was, I read them all in one go, and they're all three very, very different. But I want to say, like.
They are quite short.
They are, well, yeah, but I read them. I might have been drinking bourbon by myself in my bed, not going to lie, which is actually, that's just what I do most times, most nights. But I want to talk about Megan's book, Normal Women. And there was, for me, there's this like conflict, but I wouldn't even call it a conflict or even a tension. It's like a wavering tension, like tension. And then, no, we're going to back up about the appearance of women and how people see them and see their bodies. And can we talk about that a little bit?
I feel like Sean should answer all the questions about my book.
Yeah, Megan always deflects when people ask her.
I find it really challenging, and it's something I have to get better at, is like talking about it. I feel like I forget.
Actually, that's kind of reminds me of the tone of your book, though, is this oblique, people are looking at me, but they're not looking at me, and I don't want people to look at me, but maybe it's okay. I don't know. There's a kind of deflection happening in your book too.
I think one thing that was really interesting is that a lot of Amy's covers, they were all of her iterations were super beautiful. But a lot of them I wasn't comfortable with putting on the cover because the, how how these iterations depicted women was like very bleak. And I really, it made me see that that's how Amy interpreted the book, which is like her interpretation is totally valid, but I didn't realize that the way women like went about their lives in the book was bleak until I saw her like visual representations of that. So I think I just didn't, I think I just tried to write poems that were true and that people could understand about what it's like to be me. And I wanted to put, I think that there is tension in that because I think there's a little bit of, like I didn't want to portray the speaker, I guess, in the poems, which is literally me, as a victim, because I felt like it, as I felt sometimes like I was, sometimes I was actively participating, sometimes I wasn't. So yeah, I felt a lot of different ways about appearance, I guess. That's really confusing. Maybe Sean should just clarify that.
I am going to let Sean say something in a moment. But what I was going to say is I agree with kind of what Jen is saying. But I also feel like the tone of your book was not bleak to me. Mm-hmm. Like the...
I meant oblique.
Oblique. Oh, okay.
Oh my God. Maybe you said bleak.
Maybe you did say oblique and I just missed...
You did say oblique and I just literally just heard bleak.
Oh, okay. Oblique. Great. Yeah, yeah. But there's... What I, one of the things I love about your writing is how perceptive it is about those things. Like, I think the truths that you talk about, you handle them so well. And when you talk about, yeah, people understanding what you, like, to me, there's, yeah, no interpretation. But the tone for me is so both wry and dry. And that's something that you don't get in poems very often, which I think is amazing. Like, I love that that's kind of where your work is going. Like, there is not enough dryly funny but super astute poetry.
Oh wow, thank you.
And I love it. I just love it so much. But were you thinking about that tone, or did it kind of start to come naturally the more you were writing about these experiences?
I'm not sure. I think the one word that kept going through my mind when I was writing this book is just accessible. Like, I just really, really, really wanted the poems to be accessible to anyone. Like, there's a lot of people in my life. My closest friends aren't writers. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if my closest friends are, like, big readers. So I really wanted to write something that, like, literally anyone could read and feel something about. Not that inaccessible is... like bad or even exists. I don't know. I think someone can access any parts of a poem, even if it's complicated, but I did just want to keep it simple. And I think that when I first met Mallory and Curtis, it was through a writing, like a poetry workshop that we all have at Mallory and Curtis's apartment every second Tuesday. And I went to my first workshop there and handed in my first poem and like kept going. And I just got a lot of positive feedback from the group about my work. And I always had felt until that point that my work was like kind of too simple, not like challenging enough and not good enough and not like academic enough or not just not enough. And I think getting feedback from people that they understood the poems and like it was okay that they were simple was like really important. And then I honestly think the book just like grew out of that like space of love for what I was writing. I felt really empowered to like write the book, and the wry, dry tone. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. I also think often about, the poems that were in Lemon Hound and that you actually read at the Poetry is Dead humor issue launch, the Ophelia's video selfie and Hamlet receiving Ophelia's video selfie. Oh, yeah.
Right.
And
I used to write a lot about technology, which I don't anymore.
But I mean, those poems were both about technology, but they were also obviously a commentary on like male-female relationships, like historically and all mm-hmm. these things. Mm-hmm. But the tone was there too, like in that
that work?
I think, I mean, a lot of my early experiences as a woman were as a model.
Right.
So, like, I mean, that's very, I think that is like maybe what you're getting at is like, I started modeling when I was 13. And that's, I think, around the age when you start to really shape your identity. And I think that my identity was, I very quickly became tied to like the identity of a model, which is like essentially an object with no like voice really. And I think that writing these poems was like a way for me to like understand what that meant. And in writing them, a lot of women came up to me and said, I feel that way. Also women who like never modeled before, which is like really sad.
I mean, I know it's surprising to our listeners, but I have never modeled. I definitely did identify with those poems. Yeah, yeah.
But it
I
just,
didn't model either. I know it's shocking to everyone.
Yeah, shocking.
Yeah. So it just, I think the idea of being, is constantly seeing yourself from afar and not feeling rooted in yourself is an experience that women unfortunately have, maybe, is what I've learned from people telling me that. Yeah.
I want to say a little bit about what you were talking earlier about accessibility and thinking that your stuff's not complicated or good enough or academic enough, which has been a criticism of my writing from the very beginning from usually white male critics. The complication of your poetry is not apparent on first read, right? You have to go a little bit more and read each line carefully. Like, this is the thing about your poems, which I really loved, is that there is a surface level with which you can read your poems if you want to. And then there's a deeper engagement, which can also happen, which is, I think, a sweet spot in terms of being able to reach maximum number of readers, right?
Yeah.
Mallory's like, yeah, we're going to sell 50,000 of this chapbook.
Yeah, my mom will buy 25,000. So.
Keep pumping those out. Well, I want to then ask Sean, what were you drawn to in Megan's work? Because obviously this was the manuscript was solicited, so you're familiar with her work. Tell us more, Sean.
Yeah, I also love the tone, like the wry humor of it. When we first met to talk about the chapbook, when Megan sent me it and we met to like talk about the editing process, she like described them as really emotional and dark. And like, that was kind of like, it wasn't how I thought of them, because they are so like funny. They have this observational humor and this dry tone. And like, when you know Megan, you realize that's just her speaking voice, basically. Mm. Like, she has a poem.
It's like a coping mechanism.
About how Seal's song, A Kiss from a Rose, is about a man performing cunnilingus on a woman while she's on her period.
Yeah.
And, like, I was like, that's just a funny joke in a poem, but then when Megan workshopped that poem, she was like, yeah, it's true. That's what that... And I looked that up on the internet and nobody else believes that, but...
It's true.
That's Megan's belief. And that's
right,
what her poems
Adele,
are
it's
like.
True, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I agree with Megan
Adele
and Adele.
And I both think that it is true.
It's okay.
Therefore,
I feel like it's...
Now there are people on the internet who also believe that.
But we're going to... Yeah.
Knowledge is human created, so...
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But I think that's what Megan's poetry does. It's like, it is her saying like the world through her own eyes, which is a very powerful thing to do. Like, when I write things, I don't believe them necessarily. And it's like, it was an interesting approach for me. Like, I wasn't used to that.
Yeah, that's true. There's this thing that Megan does where it's like kind of a zooming in on something that you have observed. And yeah, it is like observational humor. It's like, this is my take, but it's much more poetic and beautiful. I mean, not that comedy can't be poetic and beautiful, but it definitely takes that, going back to the tone. Like, it's just, it's on that tip.
And there are
just the tip, which is an upcoming poem that Megan is working on right
called
now.
Called just
actually,
the
we're
tip.
All, again all working on it. It's a collaborative poem. We're all working on
I
called
so many
just
ideas
the tip.
Right now.
Me
just
too.
Tip.
Me too.
But yeah, I also wanted to say like a lot of these poems aren't
like a lot of them I wrote like when I was like 19 or something. It was weird putting the manuscript together and like, because one thing I really appreciated about Mallory reaching out is that I'm not very good at, or I find it challenging to like send my poetry out to literary journals or contests or anything. So I had a lot of poems that like no one had ever read. And so this was an opportunity for me to be like, to go through like poems I had written since I was young, like super young, and maybe people would read them, which was nice.
Yeah. Submitting poems sucks. It's the worst. Submitting anything sucks. Submitting stuff to literary journals is one of my number one least favorite things, and always has been and always will be. Contests, all of it.
How do you guys make yourself do that?
I just get rejected so much that I just don't even do it anymore. I'm like, nah, this is a trash idea for me to do.
It's just really traumatic experience for me. I don't enjoy it at all.
I also don't enjoy it, but I force myself to do it pretty frequently. But I have a rule that, you know, any bad rejection or when I get two on one day, which happens more often than you would think, then I buy myself a pint of Ben & Jerry's. So,
oh, great.
That's how I get through it.
I want to know what your flavors are.
I am a really boring ice cream person, and I love chocolate chip cookie dough.
That's the best one.
That's good.
Best one.
Yeah, that one is, I like to keep it relatively simple for Ben & Jerry's.
Yeah.
Jake, I feel like you are someone who's very good at submitting and like that sort of thing, which I really admire.
I'm very good at getting rejected as well. So,
but I think that's a really important thing to be good at.
I guess I don't think about it too much because it's like, it's unpleasant, but I'm like, well, otherwise it's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So, and I've known I've wanted to do this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been deeply unpleasant pretty much every single time, but I've gotten better at sending more and more out. Mm-hmm. And I think I recover more quickly.
Mm-hmm. That's true, actually. The more you send your work, like, the more you do it, it kind of numbs you to the rejection thing because, I don't know, do you find that too?
Yeah, I started submitting, like, way, 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 way too early. Like, I was, like, 18, and nobody should have been publishing anything that I was writing. I obviously got really used to being rejected. Like carte blanche, if you're out there, carte blanche, I'm sorry.
For all the submissions?
For all of the terrible teenage submissions that you got from...
The thing is, I agree with you. Like, I think the rejections actually are fine to me. I feel like I now genuinely just have, like, book privilege. And so I don't give as many fucks as a person who... needs, like, I have books, so now I care less about that other stuff. You know what I mean? Hopefully that will happen to me. But I mean, I think it's still great that people do submit, you know, after, like, I just personally had always had such bad luck where I was just like, oh, well, I already do all my own projects and all this other stuff. So just for me, I wanted to make space instead of kind of waiting around. But that's, again, not for everybody, which I also understand. Like, I know that I can just, like, you know, ride my other little highs. But the rejection part of it, yeah, was never... It always is worse at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then the more you do it, the more you're just like, yeah, not... Also, not everything is for everybody, you know?
Oh, that's so true.
Like, and you always have to remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as... That's the other thing. As soon as you get a champion, so, you know, Mallory approaching you, Sean approaching you, like, Adele approaching Jake... and knowing, like, as soon as you get a champion, you feel so good. Whether you're, you know, getting in the literary journal you wanted to get in, or whether you have a book right away, it's just something that that support is really, really, really important. Mm-hmm. No matter what direction it kind of goes in or how quickly it goes in that direction.
I also really like writing cover letters. Just like... I was talking to Jake about this, how much I love personal statements.
Oh my God.
I know. Like,
yeah, that's my nightmare.
I love a good personal cover letter
statement.
I get excited to submit because that means I get to like write a cool cover letter.
Can you talk more about your personal statement and why you like
it? Just for like getting into like applying to grad school, like personal statement. It's really,
I love those too. It's weird.
So why do you love them?
Can someone write mine, please?
You know what I said? I want to write yours.
You know, I already offered.
I'll tell you why.
For people, it's easier.
Cause it makes me externalize what's in my head and it gives me, an excuse to write about the themes that
I always knew I was writing about, but had never actually expressed.
Mm. Yes.
So, which is a really interesting exercise. And then it makes me better. So when you go to like a party or a literary event or whatever, and someone says, what's the thing that you're working on? What's it about? I can say it in literally like a 30-second thing.
Elevator pitch.
Yeah.
You get to develop that. Right. Yeah. I also just like, I like seeing what I'm interested in and what I've been up to like in a row like that, because I am a really anxious person and I am very hard on myself. So a personal statement is actually very therapeutic for me to actually, it's an act of self-love to like write down what I've been doing.
And to take yourself and your work seriously yeah. enough to write it.
Yes. That's why I like a good personal statement.
See, I feel like for me, part of the problem is I feel like the expectation of language is not what I want to use. Right. Like when I describe my work, I'm like, it's a fucking thing that's fucking cool. And it's fucking like this. And that's part of the problem for me where I'm like, oh, the idea of how it needs to be expressed. It's not that I think that I can't, you know, articulate what I'm about, but I feel like that's where it comes into it. Again, going back to academia and like thinking about it in this oppressive way. Mm-hmm. I think that that comes into it. And I know that in a lot of ways, tonally, this is why a lot of my work was rejected for many years. Like I get it. And it took a long time for me to realize that I was comfortable with whatever this friggin' tone is that I use, but that's just who I am and who I have. Yeah. So I feel like there's a weird capacity for me to like delve into it in that same way. It's not that I think that I don't value my work, but like the way that I want to talk about it, that like the exciting part of it. I don't know. I feel like something does get lost in translation. Adele.
Yeah. We were talking about this last night, Jake, I do think it is a useful exercise and like I can do it, but I did so much of it for academia that I resent like applying it to my poetry. Like I'm like, yes, I can do it. And I think it is useful, but I was like, no, this was for me. This was like my one safe space away from all the grants and the projects and the posturing. So like applying it to poetry, like kind of makes me upset because I was like, no, this is the thing I did to get away from that world. And so, yeah, I've been struggling. Like I can do it, but there's just something like very emotional and existential about it where I was like, no, this is the one thing that you couldn't have. But
I'm also reminded of what you said at the BC Book Prizes about how poetry exists outside of, in this space outside of capitalism. And so,
ideally,
I mean, but I can't remember exactly how you phrase it, but it really stuck with me. And so when you're writing about your poetry to get money, it feels strange because it was supposed to not, that wasn't supposed to happen.
Or like when your poetry is about how you actually want to dismantle these systems and,
right,
and
that's then so you're hard.
Like, oh, hey.
Hey, but can you give me some money from that system so also, I can then dismantle it? Yeah. It's really complicated.
Yeah. I had a tweet about this, but it's just like, yeah, it's like, I want to dismantle institutional power, but also I'm in love with the ocean. Like that's my poetic mission. Mm-hmm.
I think that's why I just do jobs involving shovels. So I can just make my money like that and write my little poems and I don't have to worry about too many grant applications or anything.
Well,
like that.
My job is literally writing these things about other writers. Like for the friends of the podcast, you may not know, some of them who I may have worked with, I'm like basically a PR person for books. So I write press releases and pitches and talk to editors on the phone about other authors' books, and I really champion them, and I really, like, I love that. I love my job so much. And I even did the same for Dina and Daniel's book, Rom-Com.
Yeah.
And they were on Global Morning News.
Yep.
but then...
Talked to a failed political candidate, Steve Darling.
Steve.
Oh, Steve.
Steve.
I'm a story mother.
But I really love writing about other authors and how amazing they are and how important their work is for the world to know about. But then when it comes to writing that about myself, I just don't. I think I don't want to do that ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
I find the same thing, like with the podcast, hosting a reading series or whatever it is. I can say so many things about other people's work, but I'm just like, whatever, I just barf this up. And then you just want to like... let that go. I'm going to pull back and I'm going to do the reverse of what we did earlier.
And I'm going to ask Adele why she's the best. I mean, she is the best. We already know. Everyone here is great. I'm going to ask former multi-show guest, friend of the podcast.
I live here. Adele I'm Barclay. The ghost in Daniel's apartment.
Yeah. She's like Alec Baldwin on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. You're like Tom Hanks.
I accept that.
Anyone who's been on, you're going to be in the Five Timers Club soon. We haven't decided what that's going to be. We'll have like a special ceremony. We'll have a special ceremony. Yeah. We'll have a gold microphone that you get to hold.
Sashes
and a crown, a little tiara.
Oh yeah.
So what, obviously you'd gotten to know Jake and his work. So what drew you, to his work and made you decide, I gotta bring this to the where he loves ghost people right away? And then you were like, boo, I'm a ghost in Daniel's apartment. I'm gonna float over to talk to Mallory.
Is that how it went?
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially. Jake. Jake's work is deeply brilliant, but also deeply empathetic. And I just think it's rare when you get both, like something that isn't afraid to like challenge you in terms of like ideas, but also feelings. Like it goes deep. And I don't know, I just, especially the tide, like there's just a lot of questions there. Like, what does it mean to love in an era of climate change? You know, how do interpersonal relationships and disaster entwine, and how do we go about our daily like minutiae as you know, the tide swells and there are no easy answers. There's just a lot of feeling to it, as you know, Jake sort of takes you down these very like eloquent and sometimes rough, but sometimes really polished. Yeah. Modes. Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Jake? How does that make you feel hearing that from Adele?
I mean, I love everything Adele says, and but yeah, we've spoken about this before, and I think that Adele is way too generous with my work, but also it makes me feel really good to know that somebody got what I was trying to lay down. Yeah, it's good. That's all I have to say.
No, that's the most special like author-editor relationship, when the author feels that the editor is picking up what you're putting down, but also that the editor is invested in you publishing the book you want to, mm-hmm. as opposed to the editor trying to shape the book the way the editor wants it.
Yeah, there wasn't much of that dynamic going on this time. I feel, yeah.
Like I barely edited it. Like I was like, this is good. Like here's some ideas. Like I felt more like, yeah, a cheerleader.
In Adele's defense, it's also like one long poem. So it's I find that those are maybe a little harder to edit because they already have their own kind of aesthetic rules that they're conforming to. And especially this one, like this poem is one of my more stilted. It's like quite artificial in that I tried to do something different from my regular work, which is usually one page lyric poems. And I was just in a really frustrated position last year with where I felt my work was going and what I was dealing with. And I was also feeling a lot of personal anxiety about the state of the world. It was right after Brexit and right before Trump's election that I started writing this book. And I kind of cribbed off Lisa Robertson's Cinema of the Present in using this short declarative sentence structure. And I just took about 6 months to write down all my bad, anxious feelings. One line at a time, basically, and then crypt them, stitch them together in the winter. And I completely forgot where I was going with that. So I'm going to pass the mic back.
Well, I was actually going to ask about the long poem form, actually, because was it an intentional thing for you? Did you start out wanting to write a long poem? Because the long poem and I have a very conflicted relationship. As I've tried to write long poems that are terrible. So, I'm like, stop, Jen. So I'm just curious how that, did you intend it? Is it like you said, you stitched it together line by line, but I'm just wondering if your Pinterest board for poetry included long poems on it.
I mean, I've been writing more long poems lately. I'm
been finding some interesting things in the forum. But no, this piece was really weird because normally I kind of overdetermine things. And I just come through, I was like, oh, I should be putting together a first book because that's where I should, quote unquote, should be at this stage in my life. And they were projects that were never going to get off the ground because they were like, I was reading, doing a lot of research about Hans Christian Andersen for some reason, like really thought that I was going to do a great gay fairy tale book, like very glad that one crashed and burned. So I was just really, really frustrated with where my writing was. And my entire process for this book was to start out, and it stayed this way for about 3 months with absolutely no expectations whatsoever that it would turn into a piece or a book and that I was just going to see where it went. And then it started off slowly as first, but as these things go, they pick up momentum, they run on their own logic, I think. So then it was winter when I decided to put it together. And I think it became a long poem primarily just because the Malahat had a long poem prize. They have a contest every 2 years for a long poem. And I used that deadline as motivation to just put it together. It didn't list, it didn't like place, of course, but that was kind of why it coalesced in the form that it did. And I'm glad, I think at one point I was like, this could be a book. And that's definitely how I pitched it to Banff as my debut collection. Smart. But it definitely also ran out of steam. And I think it's perfect where it is now.
Isn't that like the nicest feeling, though, that it's out there in its most perfect form?
Yes. And right? I was so happy when Rayla's Ghost asked for it, because also where else are you going to put a 35-page poem? Like, there's just nobody's picking that up. So
I was saying to Dina when we first got here that I read it and cried.
He talks about this.
I cried. So many. Oh. And okay, for me, additionally, whenever I read about people going to summer camp, I always cry because I've never been to a summer camp.
Okay.
And because that's not what Chinese people do to their children.
Right.
So when I read about like other people going to summer camp, I always cry because always there's so much emotion and like people's bodies and like lakes and shit. And so like, and I'm like, what the fuck is up with that?
Oh, for me, the summer camp element is really minor. It's funny that you like picked up on that.
Oh, it was really major for me.
That's hilarious. So fun fact about the summer camps that I went to, my parents weren't the type to send us to summer camp either, but I went because I went to magician summer camp when I was 11 with professional magicians
that's
what I wanted to be at 11 and 12. And I don't know if any of you have seen the Concerned Children's Advertisers, which might be an Easter commercial where everybody's good at something. Anyway, Aiden, who cuts his brother in half.
Aiden cut me in half again.
Aiden taught me card tricks, and that's my summer camp story.
Whoa. So wait.
We need to deal with
I also feel like there's just a long poem in this magician dream.
Can I also add, this has not been previously discussed, but I taught a busker camp. I taught children card tricks.
Okay.
As a summer job.
Now, this was like actual professional magicians. Like,
oh, yeah, no, I was not
the
professional.
Big one in Canada, and people came from the States, and I had no idea what I was doing at this.
I really want you to write about this more extensively. Like, I care very deeply now about this experience.
No, I just want to ask you a question about this. What is a typical day at magician camp look like? What did that look like for you? Like, what was your schedule?
Our schedule was like, we'd have like a class in the morning, so it would be like card or coin tricks, and then we'd have lunch. And then there'd be like recreation time. So we like swam. Also, this was 15 years ago, so I might be completely wrong about all of this. And then at night there would be like the professional magicians that were on like faculty would give performances. And then there were like hypnotists, and that like messed up a bunch of people. They were all acting all funny for a couple like hours after.
It was like Banff. For magicians.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. So that's why I had such a great time at Banff, because I was really prepared for it.
You'd been like, listen, I pulled a lot of rabbits out of hats. I've like done a lot of sleight of hand, and now I can handle this literary program.
Exactly.
Okay, I don't want to bring it down, but I'm going to.
Okay.
Because as Jen mentioned, your book really is very emotionally distressing.
It sure is.
Yeah.
As most of my work often can
be. Right. Yes. I mean, but your work also has
some humorous tones to it. Like you, it's not the dryness of Megan's work, but you kind of also sometimes have a one-liner.
Oh, I definitely have one.
You're like a, yeah, you're like boom, 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 boom. And then you're like, boop, boop. It's like a little, like a little one-liner where you're just like, hey guys, don't worry. I'm not killing myself. So it's fine in this moment. And that's kind of how I took it. Like a little lifeline almost.
Oh yeah.
So the book is called The Tide. Yeah. And there were these little lifelines threaded throughout it. But you talked about writing down all your most dark and upsetting.
It was really just like, what if I just let my anxiety write the book for me instead of just having anxiety about writing the book?
Right. Because so many things happen. Like there are lots of moments and of like narrative content kind of intermixed with this almost emotional commentary that's like kind of playing on it. So how, after you did the original, my anxiety's writing the book draft.
Yes.
How did you do that piecing together?
I don't know. This is how I tend to write in general. I think when I was younger, I used to write discrete poems and I'd sit down and be like, now I am writing a poem and give it a title and then I would finish it. But that hasn't been my process for several years. So I tend to write line by line. Or I'll write half a poem and then it'll get stitched together later. So I write everything by hand in my first couple drafts, which I think is a luxury that poets have. And for me, like part of the fun of writing is not actually that initial creation process, which is kind of arduous, but is actually just going through later and being like, oh, this line that I wrote 6 months ago is actually really great. And I'm going to put this at an ending. So I think it's just emblematic of my process in general with how this worked out. But as a result, I think the narrative's maybe a little, it's shifting.
I loved that about it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Like, because when we write poems, you know, I feel like the way we use pronouns, especially to talk about people that are involved in a narrative, we're not always sure. Do you know what I mean? Like that shifting part of it comes into it. So that includes sometimes the I.
Yeah, the I. The I is really not stable in this.
Yeah, the I is not, and I loved it.
It's not me half the time. There's my own experience in there, and I think that's probably obvious from just the candor of maybe some of the lines. But there's other people thrown in there as well. And from section to section, the you is definitely different people, or even from line to line. So
I loved that.
Thank you.
Like I felt like it was kind of challenging me. And now I realize it's because of your line by line process, but for me to look at each of those individual moments or descriptions or whatever was happening and look at them on the surface and just absorb the line and then also kind of question it, like what came before, what's coming after, and how everything comes together. And again, I feel like because it's a long poem, that also adds to sort of almost in this, like the mystery of the story that's being told. Like we don't know what's going to happen both to ourselves and to the world. And it's just, we're just fucking floating around.
Yeah. And I guess I'm really flattered that you picked up on that because, we were talking earlier about accessibility. I think that I struggle a lot with ideas of accessibility in my work. And this isn't an immediately approachable book, I don't think. And so to know that people are, again, picking up what I was trying to lay down is really, it just makes me really happy I don't know.
Well, it makes me really happy to know that Raheela's Ghost exists.
Woo.
That these chapbooks are in the world. We didn't really get to talk about Benny's, but Bad Egg is just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a listener, or if you're a friend listener of the podcast, you know how amazing they are and just smart and perceptive and just... the stuff that they have written in this book is, it's just a real delight to use my favorite catchphrase. It's a goddamn delight.
We love Benny's work.
Yeah.
Yep. And, I read the chapbook and, laughed and then hated myself for laughing. Is that like, it's a funny reaction. Yeah.
I feel like because a lot of times before I had read anything on the page, that's not true. I had read some stuff on the page, but I had heard them read and had invited them to read. And so had this kind of experience with the performative nature, which is really great. Again, Benny's voice is really important and is doing something different. Like Jake's, like Megan, that people are not doing, and it's very satisfying and great. And I love it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, funny, but also just like reaching into your heart and like stabbing freshly manicured nails into your aorta.
Well, if we're like talking about accessibility, so much of mm-hmm. Benny's work feels immediately accessible.
But you really have to.
Benny will have a line sort of like, I feel like it's always three quarters through a poem. And that's the one where, you know, they're like stabbing you.
It's the destructo button.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I'm gonna do my rage minute first, and then
here, let me hang on.
Are you ready?
I'm gonna time you.
Okay, so it's time for my rage minute. I honestly feel a bit tired for rage these days, but I still feel it in my soul, like it's still in there. Okay.
No.
Shh. Oh my god, I love what's happening here.
No, what's happening?
What's happening? Ah! Do you know what's happening?
Why can't you? Okay, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go!
People coming for Black Friday, like, I get it, you're above spending money in some symbolic way, but there's no reason, there's, like, definitely a reason poor people wait for huge sales, because we've all been sold a capitalist lie about Christmas and love and family and other bullshit, so just, come on. People who don't want other people to be safe, I'm sure I've talked about this before, but, like, there are no truly safe spaces, so you can fuck off. Ah! Safety isn't a punchline. And your pieces of privileged shit. Right now, I'm being forced to leave my home, and I'm still angry about that. It's not safe, and it's not cool. You know what else isn't safe and cool? The dead raccoon carcasses and animal feces that are clearly in the walls of my apartment. Like, that's not safe. But whatever. Like, we're all just trying to stay alive.
You got, like, 5 seconds.
Oh, I mean, just boots, winter clothes. I fucking can't with that shit.
Just boots.
I just don't like boots.
No.
I just only want to wear sandals. My feet are so heavy. I can't. Jen, are you ready for your emotions?
Yeah, I can do it.
Okay. I'm going to time you.
Sweet.
Do. Okay. Ready?
Mm-hmm. Go.
Okay. So I did this interview on NPR, and from the interview, I kept getting all these racist trolls, like, literally sending me emails with the subject line, "Hey, you ignorant racist," and like, who's like, that's a by the way, of course you're racist, you're ignorant, but whatever. And then people would like explain to me, like, white explain to me why Chinese people are terrible, which was really wonderful. And then I've been getting messages from young women who've been sexually assaulted asking me for support, and I'm like, this is fine, I want to support you, but also, do I just have that face where people just want to say shit to me, like stupid shit from racist trolls and also all their emotions? And I feel like when I walk down the street, people are constantly telling me stuff, and like, yeah, I'm confused now. Anyway, people are constantly telling me stuff, and I don't know how to deal with it. I don't know how to get through like this whole like support issue, and also the racist stuff is really shitty. It's shitty.
You're 5 seconds too.
Stop white explaining to me why Chinese people suck.
Yeah. Stop it.
Okay, that's amazing.
Podcast alike.
Friends and enemies of the podcast alike. Okay, I just... Stop. I just want to ask everyone a really important question.
Yeah.
First, I'm going to ask Megan. She's going to tell me, and then she has to go see her grandma. She's a fun lady who's nice. Megan, what can't you with?
What does that mean? Like, what
can't you deal with, handle? What do you hate?
I find it really hard to hate things.
You can hate a concept?
Or a system? I hate...
What can't you handle? Where you're just like, I don't want to put up with it. No one's ever said this question, but you could be the first person.
Wow, this is really putting me on the spot.
You can hate me.
I hate that I have to go... to my grandma's and pick up my winter tires and then take them to Cal Tire in Ladner and then get them put on and then go take my summer tires back to my grandma's garage. I hate that.
Wow. That
I'm not going to lie. That is terrible. I can't with that either. That's
how
really bad.
That?
No, you know what? Boring things are the worst things to put up with. Adele, what can't you with right now?
I can't with my overactive and oversensitive nervous system.
That is a lot. Everyone's rubbing Adele's back, like, in a really a gentle manner.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Jake, what can't you with?
I can't with graduate school applications because I'm applying to 9 right now, and I hate everything, and I hate writing personal statements, and I really can't with that. Just like my poems, think that I'm good, and or tell me that they're not. Also, I can't with luxury juice bars because we don't have as many.
Do you wish that you did?
In Montreal, no.
Oh, it's too distressing here. It's like upsetting. Sean, what can't you with?
I can't with the sun going down at 4 o'clock.
It's terrible.
I want daylight savings time all year round. And people complain about daylight savings time all the time, but I think they're complaining about it ending. And I just want to clear that up.
Yeah, that's a great.
Daylight savings time is great.
It's a really great point. Yeah. Yeah. All right, Curtis.
Well, mine seems trivial, but.
No, that's the point is to just do you in the moment.
I can't with the Edmonton Oilers being so bad because such a large portion of my emotional well-being is tied up that hockey team.
Are you, what is up with Connor McDavid right now?
He's playing great. Okay, so get this. He had the flu and lost 10 pounds over the last, and over that period, he got 9 points in 5 games.
So these people, these other players need to pull their shit together.
I can't even get out of my bed when I have the flu.
Yeah, me neither. Well, also, you don't have people, like, injecting you with magic serum.
That's true.
And, you know, like, when famous people get up out of their flu bed to go to a red carpet awards thing, I'm just like, yeah, because people are literally, like, make sure you don't die so you show up and look beautiful. So same thing. Like, true. People are taking care of him.
Yeah.
And we all know how they treat people with concussions. Like
Poorly.
Yeah. So they're just letting people play even when they have the flu. They're like, NBD, you probably won't die. Yeah. Well, what an important point that we made in the end. Before we go, what I want to do is kind of just let everyone go around the room again. And you can tell us if you have where we can find you online and all those things. So you can find us at cantlit.ca. You can find us on Twitter at cantlit. You can find us on Facebook at cantlit. If you want to get the selfies on Instagram, you can follow me at Del Botchery. Uh-huh. And you can follow Jen at Jen Lee Fur on Instagram for those selfies that we will be taking momentarily. One of the most important parts of the podcast. And I don't really have anything going on that I need to tell anyone about. I like to publish a book every 2 years, so one's probably coming out in 2 years. Because well, I am a selfish dirtbag.
I published 3 books in a year. No.
Yeah, that's true. I can't wait to get to that stage. Can't wait. No, I'm ready for it. Y'all ready for this? Jen, is there anything else you want to tell people?
No, I'm having, when is this airing? I'm having a book launch for my Chinese New Year book at the Sun Yat-sen Gardens, February 11th, 1 o'clock, family friendly. There will be spring rolls.
Are there? What about the lion dancers?
I think I might have lion dancers who dance to Gangnam Style.
Jen texted me about this the other day and I was like, please make this happen.
But they're little boys who lion dance to Gangnam
Style. It's going to be so amazing.
Okay, well, I don't know this for sure.
You know what? Just show up for the other stuff. If the Gangnam Style child lion dancers are there, then you're just getting an extra treat. Let's start this way. We're going to go. Megan, where can people find you on the onlines?
I don't think they can find me anywhere. I think, yeah. But they can Google my name and see a lot of pictures of a 14-year-old girl looking like she's 35.
That's true. That is 100% true. Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at Adele V. Barkley or on Instagram at Adele Veronique. Or my website, adelebarkley.com. I should update my events page. Hopefully I will.
Your website looks good. Your photo on it. It's like all magical. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So you currently can't find me online, but
yeah, you've deleted
I delete
online.
Social media all the time, but when I get it back, it'll be at Jake Byrne Writes, maybe by the time this episode airs. And I have a website that will definitely be live at the time this episode airs, and it's jakebyrnewrites.es. So Jake Byrne Writes with it. Yeah, that's a Spanish URL.
Hello.
took me a while to figure that out.
I'm on Twitter, but I don't like my Twitter handle, so I'll definitely change it. This comes out.
What is your Twitter handle now?
It's Sean Robinson 80. Just because it's a really common name. If you Google my name,
are you 80 years old?
Megan just asked if Sean was 80 years old.
Is it that there's like 80 of them?
That's my
birth year. That's your birth year. Yes.
My editor is 80.
Yeah.
You know what? Sean's really Megan spry for 80, yeah. So.
If you Google my name, it's this former Access Hollywood host. She's like all over the internet. Yeah.
That is really great.
But if you Google Sean Robinson Poet, I come up around there somewhere. So that's how you find me on the internet.
Great.
You can find me at Melatonin on Twitter, which is like a pun.
It's great. I like it.
It's actually really lame. Like, I don't know why I still have that as my, because I don't have sleeping problems. I don't know.
I assumed you.
You're
yeah.
just rubbing it in.
I assumed you did. Yeah.
I also did.
No, people.
I thought we had this bond.
No, we don't bond over that. I sleep like a rock.
Presence just helps people feel sleepy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's like, yeah, I'm boring.
So yeah, you're thank so soothing.
You. I have a website, MalloryTater.com. It's actually boring, so.
But you should go there because Mallory has a book coming out.
I do, yes.
It's in the spring.
Early March. It's called This Will Be Good. It's coming out with Book Thug Press.
It's great.
It's really I really like the cover.
It's an amazing book.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, Dina's definitely blurbing it.
Yeah,
and Adele is too. That's
yeah,
so Adele. Fun. You guys are both here.
It is not.
Oh, what is it?
It's doll's hair.
Oh, I think I saw a tiny piece of the cover.
I think when it's printed, it'll be more distinctly as hair because it does kind of look like cotton candy right now on the screen.
I like troll hair better than I like cotton candy.
Well, me too.
I like both too. I'm fine with either iteration.
Do you want to say the RG one because I always like get it mixed up?
All right, well, Curtis can handle it. Yeah, he's on it.
Okay, so you can find the press at rahilasghostpress.com, and that's RAHILAS ghostpress.com. And then Rahila's Ghost at Rahila's Ghost on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. Same spelling, just like search it up. Rahila's Ghost Press. We're all over that stuff.
And your website is?
And then I'm at CWLeBlanc.com.
Yeah.
And
do you want people to follow you on Twitter?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm at Curtis W. LeBlanc.
Great.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And I've got a book coming out.
Yes. Yep. Your book is coming out as well.
The book coming out with Nightwood in the spring as well, called Little Wild, which I'm really excited about. I felt obliged to plug that. I think that's how you're supposed to do it.
No, you should have. Yeah. So don't forget to buy tons of books just all the time. Adele's book, If I Were in a Cage, I Would Reach Out for You, is out there as well. Jen has 17 books coming out. So just get on all of those. They're all great.
Sean has a chapbook too.
Oh yeah, and Sean has a chapbook with
Frog Hollow Press.
Yeah. What's it called?
It's called Man-Made Clouds.
Man-Made Clouds. Such a good title. Buy Sean's chapbook. Yeah, buy. Beautiful. All these people in this room are beautiful. I have much love for them. I will end. I don't always say it, but Daniel, really miss you. And
Daniel, I miss you too.
Yeah, Jake misses you too.
This is not the ideal circumstance that I was hoping to see your apartment.
I know. I'm sorry. Disappointments everywhere. But these chapbooks are still available. So purchase them so they can go into a second printing. It's very exciting.
Yeah, that's going to be... Oh, yeah, I guess by the time people listen to this, they will be available for purchase online.
Yeah.
Yeah. On our website.
I know that's getting set up. Yeah, sorry. So...
We can't do that yet.
Don't worry. This will be out way late. Okay.
Time capsule.
The books will already have run out of print.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye.